B3. Number 3B.
Or again, she says, you must find error to be nothing, and only then do you handle it in science. See, it's to find that error is nothing, not just to declare, not just to state. It's really digging it, digging and digging, analyzing, uncovering, and only in this way we really give to this statement a scientific actuality, a scientific factuality. Then they are something. All right, so we have seen that. First we have seen point one, the necessity. We can't get around that anymore. Second, we have seen that declarations and statements should not be considered the same as synonymous with knowing, understanding, seeing through the claim. Let's take a third point, which we may give the following title: error in all its forms must be reduced to its native nothingness. Error in all its forms must be reduced to its native nothingness. Here we find, I'll let you write first. Here we find already a method to handle animal magnetism in a scientific way. Namely, science is always that which takes the infinite phenomena and tries to find a common denominator, which is simplifying that which is rather integrated. Simplification is a method of science. Now, we know that error has many facets, that it has many phenomena, that it comes up in numberless forms. Shall we therefore handle each error in a separate way, in a different way? Or is there a scientific method for a shortcut? And the only shortcut we always have is science, namely reduction, reducing the numberless into a one fundamental root, a cause. Here it is reducing all the forms of error just to one thing, to mortal mind. Now, can you see that the handling of evil is not something that can overburden us? It's something that we can handle easily if we take the scientific method and first see that whatever the form of error is, it's always mortal mind. And therefore we only have to handle one thing, and that's mortal mind. No matter if it comes up as lack, or if it comes up as disease, or if it comes up as accident, or if it comes up as frustration, or whatever it is, whatever comes up, it's only mortal mind, one of the manifold forms of mortal mind. So the whole thing becomes very easy, actually, very simple. But we have to see it. And therefore, say, from today onward, for the rest of the life, you see, you know now something which is terrific, which is worthwhile a few thousand or billion dollars, that whatever comes into your life in the way of error, and every time gives to error a new name, you just know it's that's the talking of the serpent, it's just always the one and the same thing, mortal mind. So we only have to learn how to deal with mortal mind, not with anything else. That's the reduction to its native nothingness. Jesus knew about that very naturally, he knew it. And therefore he too tried at his time already to teach that, and he said, how can you spoil a strong man's house? How can you enter into a strong man's house and spoil his goods, except you first bind the strong man? See, that's what it is. Our house is our mortal consciousness, full of the many goods. Not goodies, of the goods, of evil, of beliefs, full of things of mortal mind consciousness, hate and jealousy and envy and so on, full of it. And so the question is, how are we going to deal with each one of these goods in the strong man's house? Shall we deal with each one separately or not? And he says, no, first mind the strong man. The strong man who owns that house, who has command over that house, over all those many phenomena of evil. Bind him first. And Mrs. Eddy explains this story and says, mortal mind is the strong man. Says, mortal mind is the strong man. And finishes up and says, this error conquered, we can despoil the strong man of his goods. Can you see the method? Jesus had the method. Mrs. Eddy reiterated the method in our language. To bind the strong man, to bind mortal mind. Later, we will have to ask what is mortal mind. But at least now, to begin with, we already see something terrific, you know. We should already feel now we can go home and have gained a terrific lot. We have no more to battle with thousands of different kinds of evil. We have only to see through one thing, that's mortal mind. Whatever we encounter, it's all mortal mind. So simple now. And this is the way that also Mrs. Eddy would show at the end of her textbook and would show that what is necessary is really to reduce all the claims of evil to its native nothingness and to do that scientifically. Reduction, This is the point. Reduce, reduce, reduce. Instead of feeling here pops up another evil, here pops up another negative problem, here comes along something else, you should always have from now on the feeling it's all mortal mind. Starts always mortal mind. If I can take away mortal mind out of my consciousness and resolve mortal mind into the divine mind, then I have resolved all the questions, all the problems. We don't believe in it usually. And so just watch your thoughts for the next few months, how often you fall into the trap of believing that evil is something, a situation, a person, a thing, a happening, a family, a business, something like that. We always give a name to that evil instead of giving one name, mortal mind. Just one name, mortal mind. Yes, so also Mrs. Eddy at the end of the textbook in the Apocalypse, she said that sin must be reduced Christianly and scientifically to its native nothingness. So we can see that in a way, really, knowing the nothingness of nothing is actually knowing something very positive. Because even in mathematics it is so that if we multiply a negative value with another negative value, we always get a positive value. You know that from your school. That minus 5 multiplied by minus 6 is positive 30. And this is true in language, this is true in expressing and communicating in language, and this is true really also in being, namely that if we can see the nothingness of error, we really see the somethingness of truth. Which gives us the feeling that if we reduce really everything to its native nothingness, to mortal mind as its nothingness, we have established a terrific truth. So handling evil is not, say, battling and quarreling with evil and hammering on evil, is it actually establishing truth. She says a knowledge of error and of its operation must precede that understanding of truth which destroys error. Can you see that even she makes, so to say, a prerequisite, that understanding error is really understanding truth. And that's why I said, when John Dolly was asked, why do you think you could see this? He said, because I handled evil, because that's acknowledging truth. So handling evil here, as she says, is a prerequisite for understanding truth. Now later, we'll see that she makes the very opposite statements. That it is truth that uncovers mortal mind and error. And that truth is the first, and uncovers second, mortal mind. And these are contradictory statements for the human mind. And we will have to see how these contradictory statements resolve into oneness. How they are not contradictory, therefore not paradoxes, but that they are complementary in a scientific way. And that is what we have to see, in order to make out of duality a oneness. But that we'll do later on. I come to a fourth point, which I just have indicated. Understanding the nothingness of error demonstrates truth. Understanding error demonstrates truth. So we can see that this should help us to take away that attitude which says, only when I understand truth, I'm in the realm of truth and reality. She says, no. Also, when you are understanding error, you are in the realm of reality. You are in the realm of truth. For instance, she says, but the sooner error is reduced to its native nothingness, the sooner man's great reality will appear. The destruction of error is by no means the destruction of truth or life, but is what? It is an acknowledgement of truth and life. You see, now I reduce that sentence, it would read, the destruction of error is the acknowledgement of truth and life. You begin to feel that these two statements, these opposite statements, are opposite statements, but not opposite realms, that they are the two sides of one thing, of one reality. They are not opposites in the way of opposite facts or realities, but that they are two various statements about one and the same thing. So the more we would see the nothingness of error, the more we see the actuality of truth. And this would show us something, namely, that the investigation that Mrs. Eddy made into the ways and means of error, that investigation which we should make into the nature and operation and the claims of error, is a very positive research. And it will not burden us. It will not make error more real to us. We should come out of it strong and not chemicalized. Not with a sense how big error is, but with a sense how big truth is. I remember having experienced that so distinctly when I went through John Dolly's class, and he still was teacher in the movement, and I went through his class. You know, class teaching is usually 2 weeks, and in the first week he would speak mostly about truth, about God, the definition of God, all about the positive side, and it was very enlightening. We felt very happy about it, and it was beautiful and uplifting, and I don't know what, you know, when you hear for a whole week just the truth and how wonderful that truth is. And then he always spent the second week to investigate the ways and means of error. And it was all about error. Investigating error. But that was much more uplifting than the first week. And it made us much stronger than the first week. We just had a feeling nothing can move us anymore. Just felt we have built on the rock now. So this should happen to each one. If he investigates that question rightly, he should feel, I'm not going to waste my time and energies on investigating nothingness. You only investigate nothingness to find out how truth is all. And that's very positive. That's something terrific. And then even when you find out that truth is all, you have found it out through the way of understanding instead of just through the way of statement. It says that the cardinal point is that by knowing the unreality of disease, sin and death, you demonstrate what? The allness of God. Can you see that? It's not just demonstrating the unreality of disease, it's not just a physical healing. It's much more than that. It should result really in seeing the allness of God. And it would be a help to push us nearer and nearer to that standpoint of consciousness where we just see the allness, the oneness of being in divine science. Also, we must be clear that in doing that, actually it looks like as if through this method we make more of error than otherwise. And this is the right theory of Mrs. Eddy. She really says that the claims of evil become both less and more in Christian Science. Again, you have a paradox. I point out the paradoxical logic here more and more because it will be a help for us afterwards to see the logic of Christian Science. So she says evil seems to become both less and more in Christian Science than in human philosophy or creeds. So we see that Christian Science as a savior may make much more of error than philosophy or religion. Much more. Things that are no error in religion can be a great error in Christian Science. See, in religion it is no error if you have lack or no opportunities. That's just too bad, that's all. Huh? But you are not blamed for it, nothing. It's not called a sin. Huh? You are just not lucky. It's not the sin that a man commits. He's never, in religion, he's not punished for that. If he has no lack in his life, he doesn't have to go to the Catholic priest and do his beads and so on to get a consolation of his sins. That's all right. It's just too bad that that happened. In Christian Science, it's an error. It's an error because it does not conform to truth. So Christian Science makes more of error, and at the same time, less of error. How? It says it makes more because the evil that is hidden by dogma and human reason is uncovered by science. Science goes deeper than human reason and human dogmas and shows the erroneous facet of many things that are accepted as normal and as absolutely ethical and moral in the human, but not with science. Science really digs it up and therefore makes more of evil. On the other side, she says, and less. When does it make it less and why? Because evil, being thus uncovered, is found out, and exposure is 9 points of destruction. So analyzing and uncovering evil, she would say, is 9 points of destruction. 9 out of 10, it's nearly at the point of being self-destroyed. Can you see that? Just remember in your life, that when you work with the synonymous terms, with your best vision, and you have a higher vision, don't be surprised that perhaps right afterwards you have to prove that vision because an error pops up. A situation just pops up that says, now prove yourself. Then don't think that the error is an entity per se, that error is the devil per se, that there is a devil popping up. It is only the Christ idea that was analyzing, and through the analysis of Christian Science, things come to the surface that have to be taxed as error, which in human life is not taxed as error, and so must be seen as nothing. But then you have a victory. Then you are no more there where you started out. You will be brought further. Yes. So that's the point four, that understanding error is not something negative, but something positive, because it helps us to see much more clear what truth is. I take a point five. Ignorance about error is an error itself. Ignorance about error is an error itself. In other words, you can just hear all those students who say you don't have to handle error. They acknowledge error. They make error more real, actually, because that's an error per se. Not to want to know the truth as all and therefore as nothing, not to want to understand that, is an error per se. You have all those terrific clear statements in Mrs. Eddy's writings where she says that error uncondemned is not nullified. That if we don't condemn it, it is not nullified. If we just state, speak, make remark, error is nothing. You know, my dear, error is nothing. You know, it doesn't exist. You know? You nearly can hear it from the tone of the voice that it is a statement and not an understanding. And then when it is not condemned, really it's not nullified. She says, but if evil is uncondemned, it is undenied and, even worse than that, nurtured. Evil uncondemned is actually nurtured. Under such circumstances, to say that there is no evil is an evil in itself. Here you have it. To say there is no evil is an evil in itself. Because you close your eyes to it, you don't use your best faculties of a true scientific consciousness and see through it, and so evil just can do with us just what evil wants to do with us. Or we have ignorance of error subjects you to its abuse. We are abused by evil if we don't see what evil is. If we don't see its nothingness, that evil has no power, no chance, no law, no opportunity, that it has no object, no subject, no creativity, nothing. If we are ignorant of error, then we are being used by error. Or she makes that statement that if error is not condemned, we will become the victims of error. Therefore, you can see why it is that so many Christian Scientists who read such a lot and talk such a lot about the beautiful truths about it have always such a lot of problems to meet. Because they talk about it. They make statements after statements. They have learned it, and with a little bit of brain in one's head, you can repeat those statements, and it's so easy, and then they go from bad to worse. And it's sad. It's really sad. But the theory is here. If they would read the statements, they would hear it and would see why it happened that way. Evil let alone, she says, grows more real, aggressive, and enlarges its claims. Think of it. Evil let alone is not let alone. It really grows on us and misuses us. Yes. Well, here you have this fifth point that makes it very clear in Mrs. Eddy's writings that to be ignorant about error is really an error in itself. So let's be aware that we are not sidestepping the issue just blindly, but that we take the teaching as it is. All right, we make a break here.